Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're the owner, and you eat what you kill.
We are back. It's 13 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters, is our guest, as she is every week at this time, to talk to us about the most recent Kiplinger Letter. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much.
And I got a little trivia question for you.
Uh-oh.
With regard to a date. Some of these dates really are interesting to me.
Well, if it was before I was born, I won't know it.
Well, actually, both of these, I think, were probably one. I know one of them. I'm almost sure one of them is. The first railroad that was chartered in the United States. Take a guess what the date of that was.
1875.
Okay. Now, see, I would have said earlier than that, but I wouldn't have said as early as this one is. 1826.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of these dates amaze me. The first railroad.
The Republic was hardly born then.
It was called the Granite Railroad, and it was chartered and started operating in 1826. Now here's one that was probably a little bit before your birthday. The television show Route 66. You may have seen some clips of that. Do you even know what I'm talking about?
No.
Route 66, a great show. what was the, I'm trying to think of, Martin Milner was one of them, and I've forgotten who the other guy is. They drove up and down Route 66, mostly out west.
Yeah.
And in this neat little Corvette convertible.
Was it in the 1950s?
Well, you're close. It was started in 1960.
Oh, well, I was born then.
I know. Well, yeah, but you weren't watching television.
I was a tiny infant.
You weren't
yeah.
watching television.
Well, that's
then.
True.
Yeah. So anyway, or at least if you were watching, you didn't know what you were
doing. Right.
But it was a great show, and they just went places and things happened.
Oh.
You know? I don't know what the... I don't remember if they even had a job. I think they just kind of rode around, you know, just general troublemakers. Anyway, I thought folks would find that interesting. Okay, let's get into the letter. The first thing on the Kiplinger letter for this week, you guys talk about the world economy. You think it's going to strengthen next year?
Yeah, we have a good feeling about the world economy. We think that the global financial crisis is passing, and that not just Asia, but Latin America is also going to be doing better. And also key parts of Europe are going to be doing well.
Okay.
And, of course, that's good news for the United States, because the U.S. kind of had to prop up everybody else when things were going badly, especially, as you remember, the Asian financial crisis.
Yep.
We were the ones absorbing all the imports.
Well, and, you know, God bless American consumers. You know, we're so
we're such
good folks. You know, we say to ourselves, hey,
so kind.
We need to help the rest of the world. Let's go buy more stuff.
Right.
That was our motivation, right?
Let's get an extra TV to help those.
Yeah, let's help those people out over there.
Yeah.
we bought the stuff because we're consumers. We like stuff. We buy stuff. And the economy is great, and people are making money, and we can afford that stuff. And boy, the timing was perfect for those folks. Because some of the people in the other parts of the world, because their economy was off, and they needed to export this
stuff. Right.
And the exchange rate, the dollar to the yen, was helping them do that, wasn't it?
That's true. And now all that's
days.
Changing.
That's right. Now we're closer to parity.
Right.
A year ago, as we have mentioned before, the yen against the dollar was like one point four. And now it's closer to parity. It's closer to 1-to-1, 1.07 or something like that. And so it's interesting to see how all this is changing. And it's good to know that those countries are turning the corner, because now we don't have to worry about the global crisis that we were worrying about a year ago.
That's right. And there's hope then that our exports will pick up, too.
Yeah. You guys are saying it's going to be about 5% next year.
That's right.
Now, one thing that's interesting, and I got this out of KSS, the Kiplinger Special Services, is that there will be a trade deficit in merchandise, but they're expecting a trade surplus in services. How about that?
That's true. That's pretty odd, but that's what we're predicting.
A surplus in trade in service trade, which is something a lot of people, I think, probably don't think. They don't really think that much about.
We're saying service exports are going to thrive, and that includes, if you think about it, banking, insurance, engineering, those are all things that good services that we can export.
Now think about that. Now that's an export that if you haven't thought about it before, just contemplate this: banking, insurance, legal services, communications, entertainment. Obviously, it's easy to understand about movies and things like that.
Right.
But education, and this involves foreign students at U.S. colleges.
Yes.
That's trade, folks.
Exactly. And the same thing for travel. Travel exports is not exporting our tourists over there. It's when they come over here and spend dollars here.
But is it? Well, of course. The U.S. The dollars versus some of the other against some of the other currencies, only the yen has it changed very much against, right?
Right, that's correct.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, but
yeah.
But the improving economy in Japan is really going to help. It's amazing how that one location will help the overall world economy, isn't it?
Oh, no question about it. Even to the extent that Japanese will go out and spend more money in certain areas, for example, Hawaii, that's a big tourist spot for Japanese residents, and that will bring capital flows into the United States, too.
Now, I remember the old routine where one guy was talking about how things were happening, and the person he was talking to would say that was good, and the guy would say no, that's bad, and it would always be good or bad. But the guy he was listening to him didn't know what he was talking about, like people listening to me right now. But the thing is some of this is not good for us because, for example, with regard to the dollar against the yen, a lower dollar against the yen can cause inflationary pressures because imports into our country, which some of them we need, they're going to become more costly.
That's right.
We can't buy as much for a dollar as we could, say, a year ago, so that's going to create some inflation.
That's true. That would be a problem.
Yeah, which you guys talk about and you're concerned about it, which leads to our next issue, which is what the Fed has done and what they're about to do.
Well, the Fed...
What you think they're about to do.
What the Fed recently did not do was raise interest rates.
Yep.
But the key here is that they changed, you know, they always say what their stance is whenever they do anything. And they had been maintaining a neutral stance, meaning they weren't leaning one way or another, but they've changed that to a bias toward raising rates.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I want to tell you about what I predicted on Tuesday when we had our Fed Watch meeting with Eleanor Solomon and John Berchi.
John Boudreaux.
Yeah, I want to tell you what happened. And I was sort of right, but I was sort of wrong.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah.
20 after the hour, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, 888-822-8255. We are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. Joan, give us your website, please.
Our website is very easy. It's www.kiplinger.com.
K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.
That's right.
.com, and that's where you can go to subscribe to all four of their newsletters, their weekly Washington letter, which is what we're covering and I've been a subscriber to for many years, as well as the three biweeklies, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. Don't forget their personal finance magazine.
Right.
And don't forget the free trial, the free Kiplinger Special Services free trial. Please try that out. Check that out. You will not regret it. You'll at least get 1 month of good stuff if you don't subscribe. But be careful. I think you might get hooked. Okay. On Tuesday, we had every six week Fed Watch show, which is where I do a show, me and myself and Eleanor Solomon, a former economist for the Fed, and this week Don Boudreaux with the Foundation for Economic Education joined us. And I said, we won't review the whole show, but I said that I believe that there was a good chance that the Fed would raise interest rates. In fact, now I'm going to go ahead and say it more accurately. I think I said I thought they would raise rates. And the reason I thought they would was because of what we're talking about right now, that there was a lot of inflationary things going on more than ever before. Some commodity prices that we're going to talk about in a minute have gone up, and some of these things, the dollar against the yen, Joan, and I said I thought they would raise rates because I didn't think they wanted to wait till February to raise rates, and I don't think they're going to raise rates between now and the end of the year.
But
that's
Jim,
why I said that.
But, Jim?
Yes?
I thought you said that before the break, correct me if I'm wrong, I thought you said you were partially wrong and partially right.
And I was partially wrong about what I just said.
Well, I thought you were completely wrong.
Well, but see, I was partially right. What makes me partially right was what they did was they came up with a pretty strong bias toward raising rates.
But did they raise rates?
No, they didn't.
But then I think that makes you wrong.
Okay. If that makes you happy, that's fine.
Makes me deliriously
that makes
happy.
You, all right, but the thing is that their logic was the same logic as mine, and that's all I'm getting.
Oh, then now that's truly scary.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. This is not going in the right direction. I'm not happy about this conversation.
Why did you try?
Okay. Now, you guys say, though, that you think they will raise rates.
Yes.
To rein in inflation, all the reasons that I was talking about.
But we think that not this year. We think it's going to happen sometime in the first half of next year, and I'm sure that we'll refine that forecast as time goes on.
Okay. I've got something I want to read to you here from the Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
The Fed will especially, this is a quote from them, especially be alert in the months ahead trends that could contribute to inflation pressures and undermine the impressive performance of the economy.
They're going to watch two economic indicators, right?
Yep.
One is the unemployment rate.
Yep.
I forgot what the other one.
The other one is a big jump in hourly wages.
That's right. And both of those they will watch. I think both of those are numbers that come out with the monthly unemployment figures.
Now, I have a little bitty teeny tiny soapbox here.
Oh, gosh.
Look at this.
We only
unemployment
have a half hour
rate
left.
Or a big jump in hourly wages. What could be about to happen in the marketplace?
Here we go.
That would be a law that would require hourly wages to go up. Tell us the answer to that.
Time to go to your refrigerator.
Tell us the answer.
The minimum wage.
That's right. This, folks, if you ever wonder if Congress is up there in their own little world without any kind of a clue as to what's going on out in the rest of the world, which I believe they often are, and that's one of the reasons why when they're adjourned and have gone home, I feel much safer. Congress, including the Republicans, Republicans and Democrats are leaning, they're lurching pell-mell uncontrollably toward raising the minimum wage. And the Fed is publishing words like this. We're watching the hourly wages, and if they go up, we're probably going to raise interest rates. I don't understand it.
Excuse me, I was just pouring another cup of coffee.
Yeah. Okay, I'll remember that next time you get on your soapbox.
You feel better now?
I feel a lot better.
Good.
Now that we got that off our chest.
Okay,
now, you guys talk about the change in the gross domestic product. You're saying they're going to be changing that, the way they calculate that, and
yes,
we're going to talk
right.
about how they do that when we come back after these messages. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm officially off my soapbox. 888-822-8255. We'll be right back with Joan Pride of the Kiplinger Letters. Welcome back, heroes. 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners with the maximum opportunity to be successful. And one of the people who helps us do that is Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters. And she's with us right now. That's what we're talking about, the most recent Kiplinger Letter. And my website, by the way, folks, is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. Before we get into how the government is changing the way that they calculate gross domestic product, GDP, I want to go back to something I accidentally skipped over, and that's something that's very, very interesting in this. And folks, if you're wondering about whether inflation might be rearing its ugly little head, tell us what gold's doing, Joan.
Oh, gold prices are stabilizing. You know, they had been kind of low there for a while.
Down to like 240.
Right, but
from a high a few years ago of over 800.
But we say that it's going to stabilize over the next few months at 300, and part of that is due to an agreement among 15 central banks in Europe to not sell off their gold,
mm-hmm.
trying to lower the supply out there.
So you think that this increase in gold prices is more a function of supply and demand rather than inflationary fears?
Well, that's what we're saying.
Yeah. Okay.
And
well,
the other thing, too, is that Far Eastern economies that had been in the tank are now coming back, so that's going to fuel demand as well.
Yeah, it is.
So what's your take on it?
Well, I can't argue with that. I'm not an expert at all on the gold prices, but I just look around at other commodities, and other than the food goods, the food commodities, some of the other commodities are going up. You've got, look at oil. What's happening with oil prices?
Well, and again, oil is stabilizing at pretty high at $21 a barrel because the OPEC countries have stuck together.
But the thing is, though, is that that policy by that organization creates the higher prices, but because we consume so much oil, that creates inflation.
Right. But remember, the other thing we're saying is that that agreement expires in March, and at that point, the price is going to drop a bit.
I
understand. We might see a little bit of relief, but not an enormous amount. We're not going back to $10 a barrel anytime.
I understand they're already thinking about increasing production.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it might come a lot sooner than we had been forecasting.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, let's talk about the GDP, gross domestic product. The government's going to calculate it a different way.
Well, I think this was long overdue. The idea, and you and I have talked about this, what does productivity mean?
Mm-hmm.
And does productivity, when we talk about it, include the contribution of technology? And a lot of economists aren't putting that into their models.
Yep.
And that's why they're underestimating growth.
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, the GDP is going to be changed so that some things like computer software will be included as an investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to add to the figures on output, and that's going to show a higher GDP.
Okay, now folks, you hear people talking about durable goods. When you hear reporters, economic reporters, talking about what's happening in the economy, they talk about durable goods. Up to now, software was not considered a durable good.
Right.
But now it is.
That's exactly right.
As you said, you called it an investment. Also, it can be called a durable good.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Now, also, currently, as we haven't said, is currently the software products are treated as an intermediate good, which is not included in the GDP.
That's right.
You guys say that the GDP will be growing because of this.
Yes, and the next numbers you're going to see are going to be later this month. So you can watch, track that, see what happens.
Yeah. The changes in calculation of productivity is very interesting. In the past, they focused on how many hours an employee worked. And that's going to be changing because people are more productive now.
Right.
Yep.
That's true.
Well, they're going to be taking into consideration the impact of technological changes.
And see, that hadn't been done before.
That's right. And that's very important. And now we're starting to see, Joan, some of the new models. If folks, if you remember, weeks ago, maybe not with my visit with Joan, but I think I did, but I started talking about how interesting it was to me to observe some of the new models that the government and particularly the Fed was going to be using and watching to make some of their decisions with. And that I was afraid that they had not been taken into consideration some of the new dynamics in the marketplace. And that's what this is, isn't
right.
it, Joan?
Exactly.
I really would like to commend an article to you that I'd like for everyone to check out. Go to federalreserve.gov. I think I mentioned this last Tuesday, and I mentioned it in the earlier hour. But I think this is a watershed article, a watershed speech by Alan Greenspan. FederalReserve.gov. Go to the articles, and in that section, you'll find a September 30th speech that Alan Greenspan gave to the Minneapolis Federal Reserve meeting. And I'll tell you what, that is a very, very important speech, and it's written in lay terms, folks. It's not like when you hear him speak on Capitol Hill, and he talks in all this economic gobbledygook. It's plain English, and it's really a good speech. I think people will be commenting on that speech for a long time.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, do that. Okay, consumer prices. News is good for consumers.
Food prices are going to rise just a little bit, not a whole lot, over the next year or so.
Mm-hmm. Beef. I noticed beef. This is interesting. Beef, because of cutbacks in production, the prices are going to go up for beef, and that's because of the drought.
Right.
See, people, instead of feeding their animals, they sold them to slaughter. including some of the herd animals, some of the brood cows, and that affects your availability of beef. Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Pryor. We're going to see what the SBA is up to when we come back. We are back. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Joan Pryor is our guest. She's our good friend and senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. And we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger Washington letter. Joan, this is something that's very near and dear to my heart, this next subject. You guys report that the Small Business Administration will help self-employed military reservists.
Well, you know, Jim, I think the SBA is a great government agency, but this, what I'm about to tell you is so commonsensical that I'm a little bit surprised that they hadn't come up with it a long time ago. When I first saw this item going into our letter, I thought, this is new. This has never been done before.
Yeah.
The SBA, this is targeted at military reservists who own their own business, who are self-employed. And for those people, the SBA is going to offer them low-interest loans at 4% to help them keep their businesses going. In other words, you know...
When they're called in on active duty.
Exactly. To pay the mortgage, buy supplies, or anything like that if they're on active duty.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a couple of stories to tell about this because I spent 15 years in the Army altogether, active in reserve, and my last assignment was as a commander of an airborne unit in the reserves. And in 1979, when we attempted to take back the hostages in Iran, that failed mission. My unit was on standby. If that had been successful and if certain things had happened, my airborne unit was going to be deployed within 24 hours to Egypt.
Ooh.
Yeah, and
did you have a business going at the time?
I was employed. I worked for Xerox in those days, but we thought we were going to go in. And of course, many people know that they had a problem getting over there, the sandstorm, and mostly we had President Carter as a commander in chief. But that's another story. But anyway, we didn't go. But then my unit wound up going. I was long gone by then. But they wound up going, being deployed to the Gulf War. And another unit that I'm familiar with, a little postal unit, has just gotten back from like 9 months in Bosnia.
Oh no!
9 months.
And these are reservists.
Reservists.
Ooh.
Yes. And these guys, this little bitty unit, like 40 or 50 guys, people. I should say, they've been deployed numerous times.
Jeez.
And so I feel sorry for those guys.
And Jim, is that because of the diminishing ranks of the armed forces that they have to call these reservists up so much?
Yes, and they have a specialty. And see, that was the deal with our unit, with our airborne unit. We had a specialty that the Army needed, and I had the only unit of its kind in the Army. Reserve or active, but people don't realize how much the United States depends on its reservists, and so I'm very, very happy, and that's the reason we're giving a little time to this issue. I'm very proud to see that the government is doing something about this, but I'll tell you what, it's not just self-employed people who have a problem.
Oh, sure.
It affects employed people. It affects the families. It's tough on reservists. So, folks. If you know someone who's serving in the National Guard or the Reserves, those are good folks. They're doing something that's really important for our country and our world, and I admire them, and I hope you do. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about truck shipping.
Yes, sir. Well, costs in truck shipping are going to remain high for the rest of the year. The thing is that, as we've talked about, fuel costs have gone up, and demand is very strong for shipping.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this is going to get passed on to consumers, to customers.
Also, aren't there some surcharges that are about to come off, though? Have you heard about that?
No.
Let me see. I had that somewhere. Yeah.
Is that in KSS?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't have that.
There was something on surcharges. I don't have that in front of me, but there's something. I think that's going to help lower costs. But when you've got fuel oil, diesel fuel that's gone up as much as it has in the last 6 months or so, that's definitely going to affect truck shipping. And we're pointing that out, folks, so that you can be making decisions about whether to ship by truck or by rail or whatever.
Well, we're also saying that rail freight charges are going to bottom out in 2000. So after that, they're going to be on the upswing. But for next year, they'll still be pretty low.
Right. Exactly. Okay, quickly, another thing that's very interesting, stock trading is going to become exclusively electronic in a few years.
That's what we're saying. You know, that the big board's going to go away. The physical plant where that occurs.
You say, I mean, here's the words, folks, and I love this wording that you guys use. The change sweeping through the U.S. financial markets will knock down buildings by the time this is over.
That's right.
Knock down buildings?
That's right.
Wall Street?
No physical buildings where trades will take place in New York or Chicago. No physical buildings.
Brokers won't disappear, you say, but their numbers will shrink as customers take a do-it-yourself approach to trading.
The New York Stock Exchange will evolve into a brand name for a system. It won't be a place where you can go like you can go now.
And electronic markets will almost eliminate trading costs for individual institutions. This is interesting. You guys report that currently the institutions in mutual funds pay a penny to two pennies for a share for trades, where in with e-trading it's down to like 0.15 cents.
The competition is fierce.
Incredible.
It's going to get busier. And brokers are going to evolve into more financial advisory type people.
Yep. And you know what? This is going to happen quickly, relatively speaking, isn't it?
Probably quicker than even we expect.
I agree with you.
Yep.
All right, stand by. Safety after books. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit of health care and then a little bit of politics. 50 After, I'm Jim Blassie, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Don't go away. Glad you're here. I'm Jim Blassie, the Small Business Advocate. I want to remind you that some of the shows coming up include Beverly Williams, president and founder of the American Association of Home-Based Businesses, and Mike Menzies is a real live banker, an independent banker, a guy who is the president of a small independent bank in the Maryland area, and I think maybe also in Delaware, and he's going to talk to us about how to deal with your banker, what your banker must have from you, what he or she wants from you, and what you can do to make your efforts with your banker be more successful. I'm looking forward to having Mike back on the show. He's been here before. Okay, Joan Pride, we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter and health insurance. Quickly, talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, remember how everybody ran to HMOs because they were cheaper?
Yep.
Well, they're not cheaper anymore. Their costs are rising. So the clamor to do something about health care reform is now going to start coming from businesses because they're unhappy with the cost increases they're getting from HMOs.
Yep. Yep. I just saw something recently. Where was that? Oh, yeah. No, I don't have that in front of me. Oh, yeah, here it is from KSS.
Yeah.
In 87, do you have that number?
In 87?
$1,750 per worker.
Oh, right,
health,
got it.
Health benefit costs.
Yes.
But in 93, 4,000, and now it's over
4,200, right.
Yeah, yeah.
So the search is on. I'm not sure what they're going to do, but we're saying that one possible solution is to put some tax incentives in the code to encourage coverage.
We just had a show. We just did a show on that with Grace Marie Arnett, who's with the Galen Institute, one of our healthcare experts, really neat lady. And we talked about that. And what she proposes, and I agree with, is that none of the four proposals that are in Congress, even as we speak, Joan, they're up there debating this. None of the four proposals really get the job done because they focus on the wrong platform. They focus on the government solving the problem instead of giving the money the money back to the marketplace.
Right, exactly.
And what we think should happen, she and myself and others, is that it should be employee-based, not employer-based.
Right.
See, because don't give the employer tax deductions for buying the insurance for the employees. Give a tax credit to the employee to go buy their insurance.
That's right.
And you don't get the credit until you buy your insurance.
Well, that's a whole system that evolved, I think, around World War II or just afterwards to incentivize businesses to offer health insurance.
Yeah.
And there's no law that says you couldn't change that system and make it employee-based.
Yeah. Well, some of the proposals that are in Congress right now are very dangerous for employers because it allows for someone to drag an employer in as a co-defendant if you sue your health care.
Oh, right, the lawsuit provision. Yeah.
Yeah. We can't do that. Okay, let's change the subject. We got about a minute. Gore, talk to us about what Gore's doing.
He's coming back. He's on the rebound. You know, he's gotten a lot of bad press lately. Bradley's edged closer to him, raising more money. A lot of negative stories, but now Gore has moved his campaign headquarters to Nashville.
I don't call that a comeback.
That's just a window dressing. But
yeah.
Well, we're saying he will come back. He shed some of his insider Washington advisors, and he's trying to sort of get out there and do the grassroots work he needs to do and get to the people.
In the Army, when we had to run away, we called it attacking to the rear.
Are you saying this is what he's doing?
Well, I don't know. I think he's in trouble. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I think Bradley is formidable.
Well, but we are also predicting he will beat Bradley in these debates that they're talking about. And I keep saying Bradley is not going to wear well on the campaign trail. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Dull and duller.
Yep.
That's what somebody called it, and I agree with them. Joan, we got to wrap it up for this hour. As
okay.
always, you did a great job. Looking forward to next week already.
Thank you, Jim. Me too.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Got to wrap it up for this hour, folks. It's 58 after. Thank you very much for joining us. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.